Good to be with you this morning, and I certainly appreciate the invitation to come and to present this material. I'd like to tell you that I'm glad to present it, but it's very difficult for me to present the things I'll be saying this morning. I want to suggest in the very first place this morning that divorce is a subject that the Bible speaks about very openly. It is something that, according to Matthew 19, that divorce is allowed for, scripturally, is allowed for one reason, and one reason alone, and that's because of unfaithfulness. In Malachi 2, we are told, I hate putting away. And yet I'm here to share with you this morning that there's something God hates worse than divorce, and that's cheating. Because He allows that which He hates. In Matthew 19. God is not a stranger to the divorce process. In Jeremiah, the second chapter, at about verse 6, what He tells us is that that Israel had committed adultery, and that He gave her a bill of divorcement. So when we face the issues of divorce, we are not alone in this. God knows our pain. God knows our sorrow. There are many things I want to say today, and time is going to limit the things that we'll be talking about, and I'm going to do my best to get through this. I want to suggest to you that there is no such thing as a painless divorce. That divorce, by its very nature, is painful. It is that which, depending on how the situation comes, where we realize an unfaithful companion is there. Whether it be through a child that stumbles in on her mother in the bed of adultery, or whether it be in some other way where it's blurted out in a crowd, I saw your wife or your husband with another man or with another woman. However that comes to us, it suddenly throws us into a whirlwind world. It's a world that takes you strange places for a long time. There is no such thing as a painless divorce. When the reality of what has happened hits, there's a numbness that overwhelms. It's like you're stunned. And it's, what shall I do? Among the first response for some is the desire to run. For others, the tears don't come suddenly. They may come days or even a year or more later before we grieve that process. But one thing we are certain of, as divorce visits our family, or as separation, as sin visits our family in the form of adultery first, one thing that we are sure of is that it strikes us to the very core of who we are. It strikes us in our spirituality. It strikes us emotionally, physically. We forget to eat sometimes. We drive around in a daze. It strikes us socially and certainly financially, especially if there's a cunning person who has pre-planned and has closed bank accounts or shifted financial situations planning for what is about to happen. Then there is the stun also of that haunted look on the children's face when they realize mom and dad aren't together. It's going to be different now. And realizing that it's only a short step from, if mom and dad stop loving one another, will they stop loving me? And a family that was in equilibrium is suddenly thrown into unbalance and disequilibrium. And the pain continues. This morning is my task to take you down the road of what it feels like to be in a situation of unfaithfulness in a marriage. To go through what separation is and the various aspects that we face when we go through that. And then to take you through a divorce and through the divorce court. And finally, and to take you to the aftermath that has years to come. One thing I realize is that divorce is a gift of Satan that keeps on giving. The most important human relationship in life has been destroyed. And in its wake are all sorts of feelings that come that we never thought we would have. There are feelings of wanting to kill someone. The rage gets so strong. There are feelings sometimes that if we don't kill someone else, then maybe I just need to go away myself. Feelings I never thought I'd ever have. There's feelings of what am I going to do? And how am I going to deal with these issues? feelings that where people do not understand, though they try, they don't understand the lonely walk. If there was ever a time that godly people need to support and encourage one another, it is such a moment as that. And often the encouragement we need is not the preaching, not the lecturing, not the I should haves, but simply having the listening ear, and also at times the diversion, because the pain is so intense it needs its diversions. We need you there. For others, there are brethren who have been there to encourage and support, and yet for some, there have been brethren who have compounded the issue, as this issue of divorce or separation or adultery comes before the church. And I remember very well as I was faced with this situation, and I decided I'm going to do what I've taught other people to do, and that is I'm going to lay this all out, and I'll lay it and talk to the elders. Little did I realize at that time, and there are many good elderships, my experience at that point was not a good one. Little did I realize that what I would be told in just a split second is, we don't need that kind of example in the pulpit of a bad family. You've preached your last lesson here. Be out by Sunday. That was a Wednesday. So in the wake of one day before, learning that I had an unfaithful wife, going to the bank, realizing my bank accounts had been emptied and I had no resources. I had on top of that the church issues. And brethren that we had helped for years and that we had helped through their family issues. Now the time was there for me. I have to say this to these brethren's situation, that it is much easier in a situation of divorce if the guilty party will admit that. But often the guilty party doesn't do that. And what that does, it throws a cloud of a shadow of doubt on everything. And so in some ways I certainly understand the reaction of some of my brethren. But in other ways I know the pain that happened with me. I know what I needed during that time. God hates cheating. And as we said before, He allows divorce for one reason and one reason alone. I have asked others to supply with me in this lesson with their divorce experience. I want to read you one such statement. It was 3 months before our 20th wedding anniversary when he told me of his affair with one of the deacon's wives. I sat stunned, and then calmly I said, "As your sister in Christ, I'm disappointed in you, and as your wife, I'm hurt. But if you are willing, we can work through this together." I was missing something because he didn't want to work it out. He was angry because the elders had found him out. And there was no reasoning with him. When our boys came home from school, he took each one separately, told them he had committed adultery, and things would be different now. And thinking back, I was numb. I don't think he even cried that first day. I was just trying to remember to breathe. The hardest divorces are when one has been rejected by their partner. They thought their marriage was okay. And parents and friends of those who support this family disapprove of the divorce. That's when it's difficult. Divorce does not always deliver the results that one may have thought. Although people expect to feel different or feel better soon after a divorce, in many cases after the decision is made to divorce, even 1 year later, we find that the pain is there, and 1 year later, what we find is 70% say they wish they had tried to work it out more rather than go to the divorce court. Divorce is not an easy out. It does not make the problem go away. The problem will follow you for a lifetime, and it will haunt you in your dreams. It will be there when you face family reunions. It'll be there when you go to the coffins of other family members. You will have mixed and blended families that will all be there, and somehow you have to work all that through. But divorce is not the simple solution, and it's not something that will go away. I think in my own experience, as I look back on it, having gone through divorce, that if I had it to do again, then I believe I may have done it a lot differently. I may have tried to be more patient and more understanding. But yet, in hindsight, there are things that we can wish for and hope might have happened that are not to be. I want to suggest that there are long-term effects. When one partner of a marriage is unfaithful, they choose for both partners to be affected for the rest of their life. And a divine consequence of truth is simply that sin has enduring consequences. That there is a payoff. For every kick, there is a kickback. And what is sown shall be reaped. Those are principles of divine justice. The impact of divorce can affect the family structure. And what happens in one generation, I understand much more clearly now how it can affect up to the third and fourth generation. I didn't understand that in the Old Testament until I went through this and saw the disequilibrium in the family system and the divorce, the separation and divorce, changing the family norms. And now we see children who suddenly don't have the stable environment, and they reel in that imbalance in the family structure. And they realign themselves, as we'll talk about a little later this morning. One of the issues that we face as we go through the problem of realizing there is unfaithfulness is we go through the interrogation that is often there by members of the church. And I see it more with members of the church than with others. In the aftermath of all this, or while we're going through it, there will be the accusers that will come and say, "Well, I heard," and they will attack you, and when you least expect it. You may be going to somewhere to try to worship your God, and someone wants to meet you out in the parking lot, or at the back door, or want to pull you aside into a classroom, and want to open your wounds, and be so inquisitive that you can hardly worship God after you've gone through that process. There are those that I believe are very genuine in their desire to try to help people. But in that, I believe sometimes there are those who are just nosy. I've had brethren that want to find out give me all the details. And they want to make those decisions for themselves. And my statement to them is that I know what the Bible teaches on divorce and remarriage. And I also know that you're in a position where you are not to worship or associate with fornicators. I know that. And I'm here to tell you that I'm ready to stand before my God on the basis of Matthew 19, and I believe I'm scripturally divorced. That's the end of the discussion. You don't need to know the details. For those that maybe have heard things, there needs to be clarification of what's going on. But every time that someone comes up and wants to pick the wound, it's not a time for me to bleed. There are other things that need to be done. I was in a place, well, not too far out of this state, but not far from here. And a fellow I had not seen in about 8 or 9 years had heard I was speaking that night and came out and met me out in the parking lot. And he says, "Before you get, it's okay to worship with me that morning, but since I was speaking, he came and met me and he didn't shake my hand. He said, I need to ask you a question. Are you scripturally divorced?" And he wanted to know all the detail. My answer is yes. And I explained to him what I understood about scriptural divorce. I explained to him that I did the putting away. And I explained to him, yes, I was the first one at the courthouse. That needed to end the subject. But yet he took it further to the elders of that congregation. I still spoke that night, by the way. I want to suggest that there are long-term effects. And while there are those that would be negative, there are good brethren out there. And sometimes in our negativity, when we look at all the bad examples of those who have the spirit of the Pharisees, sometimes in that what we do is we forget the good brethren. Like the brother that came for a gospel meeting at a congregation where I had been preaching when this happened. This brother called me and asked me would I meet him for lunch. We didn't talk a lot about my marital situation. And what he simply said is, I just wanted to encourage you. I know you're going through a lot. Thank you, brother. I know another that when the rumors are running rampant, as they will in situations of divorce, when the rumors run rampant, there are those like the good brother who was in the middle of a gossip session in the back of the church building, and he said, I tell you what, I don't know all the details, but I know Art Adams. And that didn't happen. And that conversation stopped. And I thank my God that there are brethren who are willing to stand up and to attack tale-bearing, gossip, and whisper of those that hurt enough. We don't need more pain. We have enough. What we need is your encouragement. What we need is your help. What we need is your support. What we need is your comfort. What we need is help in our struggles. In Proverbs, the 6th chapter, in verse 10, Proverbs 10 and verse 18, 1 Peter 4 and verse 5, and many other verses that are in your book that you can read in your Bibles at your leisure, what you will see is God condemns slander and those things that we had talked about, and we need to be careful of that in our relationship, even though when we hear something like this, we're in shock. And it's a natural thing to ask for some detail. But we need to be careful that we give people the respect during that time that needs to be there, and yet at the same time, that we as congregations have enough information to know whether the person has a scriptural divorce or not. There's a fine line between that, and I understand both of those things. There is a lot of emotional minefields a person goes through when they're involved in a separation. These would include a whole range of emotions, as suddenly that which is private, the bedroom, now becomes public, and issues that go with that. In Romans, the 3rd chapter, verse 14, and also Ephesians 4 and verse 31, Paul there in Ephesians 4 talks about bitterness and to let those things be put away from you. And it's very easy when we are bombarded on various sides by those that would make life tough for us. It is very easy for us to have this attitude of bitterness. And what I have to work with sometimes almost on a daily basis is trying to stay away from that bitterness. We have some competition. The intense feelings connected to a separation and divorce can result in some pretty bizarre and out-of-character behavior. And I want to suggest in retrospect that as I look back at my life, as I look at the lives of those who have gone through a divorce, the level of irrationality and the sheer stupidity that is practiced by combating divorcees is usually quite clear in hindsight. We have two people who have loved each other and who have made a home and suddenly begin acting much out of order. I want to suggest that we need to be their anchor and not the people that spin them up, because brethren are going to come. I'm going to start on that in a minute. Okay. All right, we'll jump up and kick it here. All right, but anyway, I had told Stan that I and Mike that I'd probably sing this or start this by singing a song to you. Nobody knows the trouble I sing. Nobody knows my sorrow, and end it with nobody knows but Jesus. And anyway, that might be a good way to start it. But I don't know what you'd think about my singing voice or about a solo at this moment. Let's look at the process of divorce. There is certainly betrayal that takes place here when a person is going through a divorce. There is the feelings of betrayal. There is the marriage bed has been defiled. There are the issues of adultery. This is interesting. I want to suggest to you this. That while if you go through a divorce or you're in a situation where you have an unfaithful companion, you have some choices. And one of those choices is to stay with that companion. That the research and statistics demonstrate that those that stay with the companion, it takes 2 to 3 years to work through that grief process of the loss and the betrayal of the betrayal of the marriage bed. 2 to 3 years. Those who have been involved in longer term affairs tend to have a very bad prognosis. The longer the affair, the harder the repair. But what we find is that sometimes people are caught up in the one-night stands. They're caught up in things that are more situational. And those things tend to be worked through, not easily, but tend to be worked through with a better outcome. I want to suggest to you two things. Divorce is not a requirement. It is an option. There's another option. You can put these in the order you want. But I want to suggest that if in a person's relationship they have unfaithfulness and they are called upon to make this choice, if your heart is in the direction of healing, then you need to do the things that heal. If your heart is in the direction of divorce, you need to ask yourself some questions, among which are questions of the family, questions of the children, because children are also involved in divorces. We need to ask ourselves so many questions in these things as we go through and finally make that decision of divorce. Now, I was told by a law firm also, Stan, by the Lloyd Law Firm, and Lisa who works there, actually Shanna who works there, told me, she said, Art, what you need to be sure is in your presentation. You need to be sure to let these people know that the lawyer gets paid for what they do. When you come to them, they see money. And so don't let that be the first place you go. You need to seek spiritual counsel first. And I would underline that and heartily agree. And I thank Shanna for asking me to present that. Otherwise, what we're going to find is we may find someone that will be glad to take the case, be glad to spin it up and tell us kind of how we can go get them and how we might retaliate or even feel better after that's all over. When a person is unfaithful and there's a separation or divorce that takes place, we have a number of things that happen, including the pain of breaking or the pain of a marriage vow that has gone awry. We have pushing it through to the final decree. There may be a counter-divorce. The custody issue comes up. By the way, if you ever get into one of these, you certainly need to know what your custody laws are. In my case, my children were out of state at a Florida college summer camp. And unfortunately, because they were out of state and I did not go get them when this thing broke, then I lost my right to custody at first. Later on, two of them came back to me and lived with us. But we miss the companionship. There's the presence, whether subtle or whether very obvious, of a mate who we've leaned on for support and encouragement. We are suddenly celibate. And that sexual part of our relationship comes to abrupt end, not by our choice. Then sustaining the marriage through, the thought of a failed marriage, missing the opportunities that were taken for granted, and then the ultimate gnawing question, the numbing question, what's happening with the children? Now I want to suggest along with this too that there are well-meaning brethren, or perhaps well-meaning, that are not comfortable with us being single, and so there are all kinds of efforts to match you up. And I want to suggest, good brethren, I appreciate you so much, but I can find if I want somebody else, I can do that. You know, you get invited to dinner, and I think folks are just uncomfortable. You know, we invite other folks in, and we got one person, now, oh, we better invite somebody else, and we invite them, and here's that empty chair, and now we got a couple at the table, and sometimes those are kind of embarrassing. If we need your help, we'll ask. Here's what I was told by one good brother. He said, all right, when you go through a divorce, he said, for about 6 months, you will find nobody even looking at you because you're still acting married. But what you will find is after 6 months, you're going to have to cruise around your house to see who's in your driveway when you get home and don't answer your phone. And often what happens is some of the bizarrest calls people never talked to before that are single. Sometimes you get all these calls and suddenly want to strike up a friendship, and internet messages that sometimes are not so subtle in terms of, I heard you're single. So we need to heal. We need to heal before we get into that. I want to suggest also that time does not heal all wounds. That as a matter of fact, that as time goes on, these wounds continue to be open. 10 years after a divorce, 40 to 50% of women and 30 to 40% of men remain very angry at their former spouse, and they feel exploited and also rejected even 10 years later. Females over 40 have an especially hard time because their remarriage rate is about 28%. Income is significantly reduced, whether it's whoever the person is in the divorce. Most do not maintain their same income. And so there are those issues. 27% of the cases reported a poorer quality of life. And that certainly would be true if you have a single parent family involved here. The basic differences in how men and women handle divorces are that men tend to stay in their pain longer. And I've had some women that have challenged this one. Women, on the other hand, tend to grieve, and then they tend to move forward quicker. But men tend to sit in the problem rather than to try to pull out into a solution. What we find with divorced people or divorcing people is often there is the retreat into a lonely state of self-pity and isolation. Restaurants can be a lonely place when you eat by yourself. Especially as you look around at families and think of what should have been. There is also a situation of rebounding too quickly and rebounding into a relationship that is destructive. Sometimes there is the obsession with the sexual components and looking out for the perfect man or perfect woman. And believe me, opportunities out there abundant. Then there are some that try to escape through drugs and alcohol and sex, food and shopping, trying to find the relief. And there are some that return to their former spouse after a period of being apart. And then there are those that resent the former spouse and the rage that goes with that, sometimes for years to come. For those that divorce and are innocent, I want to suggest that in Matthew 5, that the Bible allows the innocent party to remarry. I said the innocent party. Those that begin innocent may not sustain their innocence. And I have to say this, that if you are married, until that divorce decree is there, you are not free to act unmarried. You just aren't. You're still married. And what we find sometimes is in that lonely gap and this waiting periods with states, in some states, usually 60 days up to a year, what we find is sometimes people that begin the dating process early. And what started out as innocent, they may not be marriage material again if they don't remain innocent until that divorce. I need to say that real clearly and underline that. Because I think sometimes we talk about the innocent party meaning innocent at the onset, but not innocent during the duration. And that's a significant issue. A person can forfeit their right to remarry if they are cheating during the time of the separation before the divorce. We find many passages such as Romans 1 and 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, and several verses that would emphasize that. We need to take heed to simple dangers, so that we don't become a partner or partaker of other men's sins, 1 Timothy 5:22, and that we don't fall into the snares of the devil. Family can be a major support, as was mine. But family, in terms of in-laws, can turn quickly into outlaws. And it is very natural for the child in a divorce to go to their family for solace and for help during this. The family can be a help, or the family can become an instrument of Satan. Advice sometimes that is given is you need to leave him. The frustration, the anger, the reaction of the family sometimes can be that very wedge that drives that person to make a decision to be far away. I need to say in my case that my wife was ready to come home. She was down south. The car was packed. And Mom and Dad wanted to take her for a walk out in the field. The decision was made at that point not to come home, although everything was ready. They were about to leave. In-laws need to be careful that they don't become a partner in divorce. We have talked a little bit about responses that people get. And I just want to share, and in preparing this material, Mike asked me if I would just talk kind of how the rubber hits the road and some of the things brethren are saying to each other these days. And I just want to share with you several stories or pieces of stories. There was a gentleman of those that have gone through divorce or who are divorced. There was a gentleman, all these are innocent parties, by the way. The person was told, the men have decided in the business meeting that we don't want you to preach or teach a class or lead a prayer, but we'll allow you to pass the collection plate. Limiting fellowship, if I understood that. The local preacher was asked by the innocent party, can you come and talk with my wife before this thing gets any further down the road? And the local preacher said, oh, I don't get involved in things like that. I don't know what to say to people. And the visits were never made by anyone in that congregation. And the divorce happened. Both were members of that congregation. Several preachers were standing at the back of a church building, and there were probably others there as well. They told the story of a pending divorce and some of the detail, to which another preacher said, sounds like to me he just needs to stay single. And everyone laughed. That's not funny. An eldership told one innocent lady, you'll have to come forward and repent of divorce in order to be accepted here. They knew her husband was guilty. In order to be accepted here, you need to repent of divorce. She did not feel she was wrong, but that was made as a condition that you're going to be okay here. And this lady said, right then it was more important to me to have their support, though I did not believe that I was wrong. And she went forward and had prayers. An eldership told one innocent party, unless you have actual evidence, not circumstantial, of the actual act of adultery, then you must go back to him. Their position that one had to be caught in the very act of adultery. In spite of the evidence, the love notes, the text messages, the strange calls, the glasses that were sitting on the counter, one with lipstick on them when she was at work in her own house, the lipstick that was not her shade on her pillowcase, and an STD that was brought into their relationship. And the message was, unless you have evidence of the actual act, that someone saw this in the very act, you have no right to divorce and remarry. A preacher from another congregation was almost caught as a peeping Tom, trying to catch a member in the very act, as he would sneak around outside and look through windows, and connive with some others about putting tape recorders, voice-activated tape recorders under the bed, so they could catch someone in the very act, so they could maintain the innocence of the innocent party. One leader in a congregation told me this. He says, and this is before divorce, he said, the policy of this congregation is to meet with anyone who comes in here who is divorced and to tell them they'd probably be very uncomfortable here and we would rather they go somewhere else. I asked the question, even if they're innocent? And the answer, that's our policy. I can't help thinking of Diotrephes. Another preacher came to an innocent party he hadn't seen for a number of years. Had not approached him, written, or in any way contacted that person. He came to that person and said, "You know, I need to know about your divorce so I know whether to eat with you or not." The event was that preacher's mother's funeral. That man stands right here. At another place, a newcomer came to worship with his young child. The elders called the preacher at the door and said, "We need you to change your lesson today. We have a man who's in process of divorce. He needs to hear the message of God on divorce. Pour it on thick. And we'll see if he comes back or not." This preacher delivered that lesson and has repented many times over. For one divorcing, there are struggles, as we've identified. How do you get through that? How do you survive it? When all the crush comes down on you. And I would suggest that one way that we look at this is to go to the book of Hosea. And there we find God asking a man to do the most difficult thing God ever asked anybody to do, I think. And that is, he asked this man, Hosea, glad he didn't ask all of us to do that, but he asked Hosea to take a wife out of whoredom. And you remember the story that unfolds in the book. The first child was his. Second child, he wondered, is it mine? And third child is like, this child's not mine. And you remember the situation, how Gomer, the wife, ended up being sold into slavery. And finally, Hosea bought her back. And what God wanted Hosea to see is, I need you to understand what it feels like when adultering Israel goes out and plays the harlot. I need you to see what it feels like so that you can get this message out to the people. And I've often asked in my prayer life, Lord, of all things, why did I go here? And brethren offer me scriptures. Maybe you're brought to the kingdom for such a time as this. I need to say some other things very quickly as the time has already gone. But I want to suggest to you that we have those detectives amongst us. But I want to talk briefly about something that is in the book, and that is the act of divorce. A number of our brethren are writing all kinds of materials and taking positions that I believe if we'd kind of look, change the paradigm a little bit and look through the eyes of a person divorcing and spend a little time in divorce courts, you might see things a little differently. In the divorce process, the way it was for me, I ended up basically in this situation not even going into the courtroom. The papers were filed, the attorney took it in, it was uncontested. And basically, the judge and the attorneys signed the papers. He came out and handed me the papers. He says, "Well, it's done. You're free." That was the attorney's statement to me. In that case, I wasn't brought up on the stand. It was uncontested. I wasn't brought up on the stand. I wasn't asked the questions. And some of our brethren get kind of picky on some of this. They say, "Well, you know, if there was a filing and a counterfiling, then which paper did the judge sign?" I tell you what, the judge and the prosecutor, the judge and the lawyer don't care. You hand the paper, it's signed. It's in a whole stack of other papers, and you may not even see the judge. That's how easy some of these things are. And for them, it's a day's work. That's one in many in the stack that they're signing. Let me talk briefly about children, and then I'm going to have to stop. In terms of children, children go through some pretty severe things. And depending on the age of the child when the divorce is initiated, you can have more and more trauma. There's some common signs with children, and often they're forgotten because the two divorcing people are caught up in their own pain. But there's some common signs that are sadness, and sometimes even suicidal thoughts, often suicidal thoughts and depression. Their whole home has been ripped up. There's feelings of abandonment. Mom and dad are different now. There's the apathy and the withdrawal from the family that sometimes takes place. Anger, rage, and sometimes even violence are acts of acting out. Impulsivity. For those that are a little older, there may be a tendency to get into drugs and alcohol as a means of escape. And certainly sexual activity is not to be discounted as the young people seek to find nurturing and being held and being comforted when they can't have that from their parents. They seek it elsewhere. These things all can come to the surface. Then there's that thing of child support. We need to remember Romans 13, that even though a partner may be innocent and not have their children, that if they're supposed to pay child support, I believe that's a law of the land. And if you don't do that and you don't care for your own, you're worse than an infidel. And I didn't say that. God said it in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. Those that don't care for their own have denied the faith and are worse than an infidel. That's where the innocent may in fact become wrong and uninnocent in relation to taking care of their own family. How are we going to work out the logistics of this? Because now we've got kids in two locations and kids have two homes. Some people lately have been pretty creative with that, and what they've done is they have basically decided to leave the kids in one home, and mom and dad, who caused the problem, now they change homes. So one comes in, lives here with the kids, then leaves, and the other comes in and lives with the kids. And so the kids have the same school. Some of those creative things are happening out there. We need to also look that when a partner is not there, look at the role models. That when dad or mom's not in the picture, we need someone that can be there. And what I would suggest is that our brethren can fill those roles, yet I offer caution. And that is that that we need to be careful when we are helping those to remember that they may tend to be very vulnerable. And that when you supply that break for them, don't get caught up with them. I know of a situation of a deacon who went to a place wanting to help with a young man. And was on the second time he was there that he began hitting on the woman who was in the middle of the divorce, feeling lonely and certainly very vulnerable. I need to also be careful that you don't be too alone with these kids, because it only takes just a word or two to have you in orange and stripes sitting in a prison, and whether it be true or not. And so guard yourself and stay away from any suggestion of those things. But even more, the worst is yet to come. 25 years later, children are still reeling from the effects of divorce. There was a woman that tried to disprove that. And she did a study, 25-year longitudinal study that's in your book. And what she found is that the effects on the family into the second and third and fourth generation are very real based on the decisions made in a brief moment of time. Elders need to act and not react. And what I read here is that that the first one with a matter that brings a matter often seems to be the right one with this. But I suggest to you in Proverbs 18, verse 17, he that is first with a cause seems just, that the first story is not necessarily the right story, and the second story is not necessarily the right story, that in between may lie the truths that a congregation needs to deal with. It takes the wisdom of Solomon to deal with emotional people who are hurting and who each want to feel like they are the right person in this. Friends need to be careful, because often what happens is friends and brethren tend to pull away. You've been friends with the family unit, and not knowing how to deal with them separately as persons, you've dealt with the family. And now brethren sometimes don't know how to deal with that. And it's awkward for them, and unfortunately what happens is it looks like they're pulling away and leaves you in isolation, when maybe that's not what is intended at all. I want to finally say this, and that is that if you're going through a divorce, that there is plenty of help out there. Certainly the first help needs to come from the congregation, as the family of God wraps its arms around you and helps you through that process, whether you're innocent or guilty. The family of God needs to wrap their arms around you and help you get back where you need to be. That may be that you never remarry again, and that's a consequence of unfaithfulness. But that doesn't necessarily mean you can't go to heaven. You can get that straight. So being unfaithful doesn't mean that you're kicked out. It may mean that you have limits if you want to go to heaven. And so we need to look at both sides of that. I found during my time in going through all of this that it helped me a great deal to be able to write. And I wrote some rather bizarre poetry and prose and journaling during that time. And I want to just share with you an excerpt. Over my desk is a green book. It's a notebook, three-ring notebook. And this is an excerpt from one thing I wrote. His lonely heart ached to be with the one he loved. But he grew tired and weary, a lonely soul yearning for his mate. And finally he gave up. He cried out in pain. An empty heart is a lonely place, and time and energy can be spent, and yet the void is never filled. God hates divorce. I do too.